Devil We Know contains graphic content and intense subject matter. Listener discretion is advised. Everywhere we look, everywhere we go, every city, every town, every neighborhood, every street, there is a devil we know. This is Devil We Know, and I am your host, Aaron. Families affect people in interesting ways. When one family member might lie to avoid confrontation, another might be able to draw out the cold, hard truth. A person who tends to be brutally honest with others might lie to spare a family member's feelings. People often say that they would do anything for family, and it's true. They take jobs they hate, move across country, and even kill to protect those they love. It's instinct, but there is another side to this as well. One study released in 2016 found that over 93% of women killed by men were murdered not by strangers, but by men they knew. More statistics show the fatality rate of family violence steadily climbing over the years since. It's hard to admit, but the people closest to us are often those most likely to hurt us. Sometimes that's the price of trusting someone. Sometimes seemingly good people snap for reasons we cannot understand. Whatever the case, it's at these times it becomes clear that the devil we know is among us. Shanann Catherine Watts, age 34, was living the life. She was a loving mother, a doting wife, happily raising a family in the state of Colorado. She was well-liked by acquaintances and loved by her social media friends all over the world. She had built a name for herself with her company, Livelle, selling a weight loss supplement called Thrive that was really taking off. Her friends and colleagues celebrated each of her successes, from earning a higher salary when her sales increased to her weight loss victories, which were often shared by her supportive husband, Chris. In fact, Chris was known for posting on Facebook about how proud he was of Shanann and their two beautiful daughters. To all who were connected with her, it was widely accepted that Shanann's home life was about as good as they come. The two had a loving relationship filled with attention, care, and physical intimacy, and two children they adored, Bella and Celeste, who they also called Cece. Their home life was considered to be ideal until the morning of Monday, August 13th, when Shanann and her two daughters went missing. Christopher Lee Watts, age 33, was hailed by friends and family alike as an attentive, caring father and loving husband. In the words of family friend Jeremy Lindstrom, Chris was the mellow guy who wouldn't hurt a fly. Working with petroleum company Anadarko as a field supervisor, Chris was surrounded by work. However, his attention to family was so profound that Shanann never once complained to her friends about his work ethic. On the contrary, his work to better his health alongside his wife earned him her undying support, as the couple benefited from Shanann's work with Thrive in more ways than one. Chris often bragged that his wife was making a near six-figure income with her own business, which helped both of them lose significant weight over the past couple of years. Shanann posted a picture of herself with Chris saying,
"I love this man. He's my rock."
It was clear that they had what appeared to be a solid, loving relationship, with even more surprises on the way. Chris expressed great interest in having another child, and Shanann shared with Chris in the spring of 2018 that their family was about to get one size bigger. Chris lost weight with his wife using her company's product, Thrive. According to many friends, such as Addie Maloney and Cassie Rosenberg, Chris soon stepped up his weight loss efforts by adding weights and elliptical to his routine, all of which was supported by Shanann, who purchased the equipment for him. She even posted video of Chris doing push-ups with their young daughters on his back. It was a self-assuring portrait of the perfect family. As Shanann lifted her family up in the eyes of the public, Chris appeared to be proving himself the same doting father and husband, incapable of misdeed against the dear girls in his life. Here is audio of Chris talking with law enforcement about his wife and a little bit about himself as a person.
Like when me and Shanann met, it was like, you know, she was always like pushing me away, kind of like, you know,
she was sick for a while, right?
She had just got diagnosed with lupus and she was on like a bunch of different medications and stuff. And, it was like, I guess I wasn't her type.
You weren't her type?
I wasn't her type. Okay. I was like, She told me, like, when she first, because we had met.
She told you that?
Yeah. You're not exactly. I remember you telling me that.
Yeah, it was like, you know, when we first met, like, it was at a movie theater. My cousin's ex-wife set us up.
You were dressed like shit, weren't you?
I didn't.
That's what you told me.
Yeah, I didn't know, like, that.
Before we had any games.
So she was fancy and he was in, like, shorts and tennis shoes or something, right?
Shoes and, like, I should have known the doorman, you know, was in a suit. And I was just like, this isn't good.
I like, was it a theater?
It was a fancy theater, right?
It was in Charlotte. It was called the Epicenter. And apparently, they give you, like, champagne and all kinds of stuff.
Oh, this is a fancy date night theater.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he came, theater. I think he came like he was going to a Cinemax.
Like I was going to a bar.
Like an AMC.
Like a play theater.
No, it was like you, like, we just watched a normal movie, but like, you can, like, drink champagne and, like, have, like, you know, a Jack and Coke inside the theater and just sit there and just whatever. But, like, yeah, so when she first saw me, she was like, I should probably just turn and talk to the bartender a little more. She's like, no, I'm not here to meet. But yeah, like, it was, I was, like, persistent trying to pursue something I liked her. Mm-hmm. And, even on the first day, like, I couldn't even eat anything. Really, I was just like,
was she nervous?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, she was just like, you know, chowing down. And she was like, you're like a bird. I'm like, oh, that's fine. And she taught my parents, like, you know, months later, she's like, this guy just never ate. I'm like, this guy eats like a trash disposal. Just trash disposal. I was like, no, that was not around me. I was like, well, I'm just nervous. I was just like, I was always like shaking and everything. But, yeah, I was always pursuing her, and then just like, finally, I could go on to her, but, like, you know, I would always, like, with her medications and stuff, I would always, like, she had, like, 8 miles of medication, so I would always get, like, her day and nights and kind of, like, put them all in that little, you know, flip open
pill box.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I would always, you know, be around her. I even went to her colonoscopy. She said after that she knew I was, like, kind of a keeper. It's like, you know, who goes to a colonoscopy after 2 months with somebody?
Right.
That's a little soon.
Well, she asked if she needed a ride. I'm like, yeah. She's like, you want to go across the colonoscopy with me? I'm like, sure, why not? Yeah. Like, even sat with her while she drank that nasty stuff all day.
Yeah.
Oh. Where she's in the bathroom.
That's
all
a good
day.
Test.
that clear stuff that's not really, that doesn't really taste clear. Yeah, but yeah, it was. I mean, it felt like it was a great relationship. Everything was great.
Now you're talking about with Kissinger.
No, with Tom Elshin. And, like, the first year, you know, like, yeah, my parents never, I don't know, my mom was always kind of hesitant.
Why?
I was the baby, I guess. I never, you know, because I never had a girlfriend in high school, so it's kind of like she never, like, really saw me, like.
Oh, interesting. So she's kind of watching her baby walk out a little bit.
Yeah, because when I turned 18, I graduated, I never moved back.
Okay.
That at home. My sister moved back and forth.
How old were you when you met Shanann?
I was 25. It was 2010, so.
Okay.
So no serious girlfriends before that?
Nothing more than, like, 6 months or so. Yeah, there was some girls here and there, but just nothing more than, like, you know. The last girlfriend I had before Shanann, she would just actually got divorced. And I should have never did that, but it was more of like I was kind of like helping her get through her divorce. It seemed like she went on to somebody else. I'm like, oh, nice to know.
You're the rebound guy?
The rebound guy.
Pretty much. But, you know, that's how it goes.
Would you say that in your relationships with women, it seems to me, and you tell me if I'm wrong, it seems to me like you're attracted to maybe a more dominant personality?
It seemed like it, because I've been more of the just reserved. I mean, I just kind of like go with the flow type.
Yeah.
And like, Shanann usually made all the decisions.
Then, something began to change. Chris started going for long runs to further improve his fitness. The more he ran, the less time he had for his family. Between January and June of 2018, Chris had upgraded from dad bod to buff, in the words of Addie Maloney. By the time Shanann posted a video of her telling Chris that they were going to have a new baby, Chris seemed less than excited. Friends began to notice his disinterest about the new addition to their family. Some speculated that finances may have been tighter than they appeared for the Watts. And Jeremy Lindstrom, Chris's friend, suggested that the couple may have been living above their means for some time. The idea of having a new child in a struggling financial situation seemed like a daunting and reasonable cause for concern, if indeed there was one. But Shanann was beside herself about Chris's sudden lack of desire to have another child. As more time passed, it seemed to Shanann that Chris had become a totally different person from the excited and loving husband who had told her he wanted the baby in the first place. A few family friends recognized a need for the couple to see a marriage counselor to work through their problems, but the real problems came when one of them decided to lead a double life. With his newly upgraded physique, Chris began wooing another woman. He found comfort in speaking to and flirting with one particular woman at his work, Nicole Kessinger, who goes by Nikki. With all the travel that Shanann had been doing, the opportunity was certainly there. At first, they talked about their shared interests in fitness and their love for cars. They spoke daily, and soon Chris began texting her on his work phone before moving the increasingly personal conversations to his personal phone. At first, he only told Nikki piecemeal facts about his life, which she chalked up to him being shy. But as their relationship continued to grow, Chris opened up to her more and more. First, he mentioned his kids, a new fact about him which she thought was endearing. Only later did she learn that he was still married. But Chris told her that Shanann had suggested they separate, and that they had tried to salvage the relationship, but to no avail. All of this seemed unfortunate to Nikki, but she relented and continued her relationship with him, later noting her unease at seeing him before a divorce was final. Chris enjoyed his time with Nikki, and for the most part, she felt the same. However, in a relationship that already included physical intimacy and gifts, along with talks of their future together, Nikki attempted to convince Chris to work on his marriage with Shanann. She would notice Chris's house filled with familial tokens and pictures of a life he had totally separate from Nikki. She told him that he had a thing of beauty with his daughters, and she later told police that it was obvious how much he cared for them. Nikki suggested to Chris that he should try to save this way of life, and she pled with him to consider the effects that separation would have on his children. He assured Nikki that the girls would be fine, and he continued to pursue his relationship with her. And here is Chris discussing more with law enforcement on how he met Nikki and their relationship.
So it was probably around June 1st or something, that's when I first met her. And it was just like a work conversation. She messed with the gas meters that, you know, we were out in the field. And I was messing up. And, you know, I took it to her like, hey, you know, what's going on with this? Like, how do I fix it? And, you know, after that, you know, we just ran into each other a few times in the office, and I think it was probably the fourth time meeting. She had asked me, because like when we were talking back and forth, I would say, you know, like we moved here from Colorado or from North Carolina, stuff like that. And then she's like, "What's all this weed stuff?" I'm like, "God, I took out my phone and showed her a picture." Like, my girl's on the phone. I'm like, "Oh, okay." Like, she's like, "Yeah, but, you know, I didn't wear a ring at work because like, I sent the officer to get refitted. Like, I lost all that weight."
You lost so much weight that your fingers lost weight?
Yeah, it was literally like, I was out in the snow one time, I went like that, and my ring went off on the rocks. So I was like, I was panicking, trying to find out, like, where it's at. But, so after that, she left me alone for a couple days, and she texted me outside the field. And then after that, we just kept texting back and forth, and it was just, you know, just like, you know, like, she used to work in a little rig out in North Dakota, I think. And we just kind of shredding stories back and forth about what we did and everything. And then one day it just kind of went to a different level. And then I never thought it would ever go to that level. But she was talking about meeting up after we got back from San Diego. We were in San Diego from the 22nd to the 26th of June. And we met up after we got back.
How did you guys meet up?
At a park in Florida. At Florida somewhere. And after that, we just kept seeing each other in this whole month of July.
So let me ask you this. You tell me if I'm wrong. You strike me as somewhat of a shy person. So when you guys were meeting, was it just kind of very initiatory, like flirting at first? Okay. From both sides?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, just kind of like feeling each other out. It's kind of
and so texts and calls?
More near the end of June.
Okay. And what makes you remember that it's June that it happened?
Because we called each other before I left to go to San Diego.
Oh, okay. At first, did you think something might happen?
I just thought it was just flirting. I didn't think it was actually like something that would actually happen.
Yeah. Well, that's totally natural, right? I mean, everyone kind of flirts at work, right? Because the relationship between men and women is different. So if you're working with a girl at work, it's just kind of natural to flirt.
I wish I was out in the field more instead of in the office.
Kind of see it in your eyes. That's kind of where the path started, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if I was like, because when I was a field, when I went from like a rover to a field coordinator, like I would spend more time in the morning time in the office trying to get everything like situated where we're going to go, everything like that. You know, if I was a rover, I'd be more out in the field instead of like coming to the office like more than an hour.
Right.
It just gave me more time to run into her, pretty much.
Yeah. Okay. What did she know about you? Did she know you were married at first?
She did, once I showed her the pictures on the phone. Yeah. I'm like, you know, the home screen picture.
So was your wife in that picture, or was it just your girls?
It was just my girls right there, but my wife was the, like, the lock screen.
Oh.
So she knew I was married and my kids.
Okay.
Are you aware that she said she didn't know you were married? What did you think about that?
It was like, just trying to save face, trying to, you know. I was just trying to, some of my sister said it was like, just trying to keep things together.
Yeah.
Just trying to, she phrased it a different way, but just kind of like, just like ground control, just trying to control everything that's going on around her. I'm sure she got bombarded by all kinds of different sides from the media and everything, so.
Have you talked to her at all? No.
No. I'm hoping she hasn't, like, you know, written me in a different alias or something. No, I'm not talking to her that way.
Oh.
And are you not allowed to talk to her?
I would hope not.
Okay. No one's told you that, then?
No, I mean, I would expect, like, I thought, like, Colorado had said, like, a DOC list. If you're on, like, a victim list, you can't call anybody.
Oh, right.
But here, I'm not sure if that's the same. But okay, I've just talked to my sister, parents. That's a friend of my parents.
Do you wish you could talk to her?
Maybe once, just to...
Just to get some closure?
Just to say, like, hey, you know, just once.
Yeah.
Just to say, like, I'm sorry this all happened. I'm sorry. I'm not sure, like, what happened, like, afterwards. Like, what you went through. Like, if you had, like, counseling, if you're, like, you know, different state, if you had to leave everything behind. I just want to let you know I'm sorry. And that's not something that you saw in my life happening or happening to somebody else. Either.
Would you be all right if we told her that?
That's fine.
Do you want us to? Do you want us not to?
And if she would want to even talk to you, I'm not sure if someone comes up. I'm sure she'd answer your phone call more than the attorney phone call that she didn't want to call. Answer.
Yeah.
Oh, so your attorney tried to call her and she wouldn't answer?
Yeah. Yeah, because I remember her phone number, but after that they figured out, I guess, where she lived. They left a call business card there. And she just, pretty much after like the fifth attempt, she said stop.
Yeah. I'm sure she's getting bombarded like everyone else, so.
Hopefully it's calmed down since, but I'm sure, like, I just hope she can, like, I'm not, there's like normalcy for her, not since she's on the outside, but I'm hoping it can get that way at some point. I'm not sure if she had to leave Colorado or not, but I'm sure, like, that would have been hard if she did. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Darker wasn't dreamed up, so that's one thing I always, like, asked my attorneys, is like, did she have to leave? Like, did she have to do anything at work? And that was one thing. So she always told me that was her dream job. So.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Yeah. What did she mean? Oh, like an oil company in the dark. I was like, yeah. I mean, unless you're working for like BP or like ConocoPhillips or something.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
And the dark, I was like,
big leagues.
Yeah.
Can I ask kind of a tough question?
Yeah.
Did you love her?
I felt like it was true.
I think it was the same from her.
Meanwhile, Shanann had been living her normal life, posting on Facebook about her loving husband and beautiful kids, seemingly unaware of the double life that Chris had been leading. But it soon became clear that the glowing couple were not all smiles. Shanann had noticed a markedly more distant Chris before she took her daughters to visit family for 6 weeks in North Carolina. Although she told her closest friends that she and Chris were fine and
we couldn't get enough of each other,
she started to notice a steady change in his demeanor, which she attributed at first to a recent altercation she had with Chris's mother regarding their daughter's food allergy. Shanann later vied for her husband's support, but to no avail. She told her friend Addie,
Chris was submissive to his parents last night as usual,
and with the seriousness of the discussion made her wonder why he was being so dismissive to Shanann. Of course, this was the most rational explanation at the time for Chris's notably strange and narcissistic behavior. Narcissistic behavior and psychopathic behavior has been heavily discussed when learning more about Chris Watts and his behavioral change. Here's a short snippet from psychologist Dr. Todd Grande explaining what some of these characteristics mean and how they could possibly apply to Chris Watts' behavioral traits.
So now, kind of looking at all this information after hearing the timeline and this progression of the affair and the deterioration of the marriage, we look over to psychopathy and narcissism. And I've heard a lot of different opinions about what could be potentially going on with Chris Watts, or what was going on at this time, potentially. We see people that think that maybe psychopathy was at work, but not narcissism. Some people believe it was both psychopathy and narcissism. And still we see others who say it had nothing to do with either construct, and it was simply rage. And I'm going to take a look here at some of the symptoms of psychopathy and narcissism and kind of go through and indicate where I think there may be some connection between these constructs and what was going on with Chris Watts. So I'll start here with psychopathy. And it's important to note here that I'm going through some of the characteristics, but these characteristics aren't dichotomous. They're not all or nothing. Somebody can have any of these characteristics to a degree. And that's really what I'll be looking at here. So the first one we see with psychopathy would be pathological lying. And this isn't just lying once in a while. This is lying for a purpose, or sometimes lying for no purpose. And we see really a lot of deception involved here in this case, specifically where Chris was deceiving Shanann. So there appears to be pathological lying. Lack of empathy, remorse, or guilt. This seems pretty clear. We do see some evidence later on of some remorse and even guilt, but certainly right before and during the murders, we don't see any sign of empathy, remorse, or guilt. Another indication of psychopathy is violating society's norms, and of course committing murder would qualify as that. The next characteristic is irresponsibility, and I think it's safe to say based on the horrific crime he committed, that was certainly irresponsible. Maybe not in the way we usually see with psychopathy. The irresponsibility is usually more related to, on a long-term basis, just not being responsible. The next characteristic is impulsivity, and this, of course, seems pretty clear, especially the moment of rage when he committed the first murder of his wife. We see shallow affect, so this is when somebody doesn't really seem to have too much depth or sensitivity. That appears to be the case. It's also related to superficial charm, which evidently Chris had because he entered into an affair with Kessinger and she indicated that he was charming. Now, this may not have been superficial charm, but again, just looking at this as a matter of degrees and speculating, it seems reasonable to connect this characteristic to this situation. We also see a failure to have long-term goals. This is interesting because Chris did have long-term goals. They were just antisocial goals. We see poor behavioral controls. This seems pretty clear, again, going into a rage and committing murder. We see that criminal versatility is a sign of psychopathy. And this is interesting because this means that somebody has the capability of committing a lot of different types of crimes. Now, Chris did commit several crimes in the course of these murders, including, of course, the murders themselves. But if we look at the differences between the murders, it was kind of impulsive and in a rage with the first murder. Like, that seems reasonable to believe that. The murder of Shanann by Chris, but then a more cold and calculating murder of his daughters. He had 45 minutes in that truck to calm down, for that rage to subside. I would think it would be very unlikely that that rage could stay really in a high state for that long. So he did demonstrate criminal versatility. We also see low neuroticism, and this is when somebody is really calm under stress. So individuals who are psychopathic can commit horrific crimes and not have a lot of anxiety and depression and not a lot of nervousness. And we actually do see that here. Chris was able to commit these crimes in a cold and calculating way and then go back to texting with his realtor and texting with his girlfriend and giggling behind closed doors because he told the police he had nothing to do with the disappearance of his family. This does kind of indicate low neuroticism, a level of emotional stability that's really too stable. Low neuroticism with psychopathy is when somebody's too emotionally stable, when they don't have really hardly any variation in emotions at all. Psychopathy also has sensation seeking. This is when somebody gets bored easily, and I think this is really a major contributor to affairs, and it does seem clear that Chris was enjoying this affair, and it might have been kind of satisfying some of that sensation-seeking characteristic. So with psychopathy, we see some areas of this construct that seem to connect to what was going on in this case. Now, how about narcissism? Well, narcissism, I think, here is a little bit more difficult because narcissism has two types, grandiose and vulnerable. So we see some elements of narcissism that appear to be operating here, and then some elements that don't really seem to be operating. So, for example, with grandiose narcissism, we see extroversion. But with vulnerable, we see introversion. Well, there are some behaviors that Watts demonstrated that did seem extrovert, like starting an affair, which clearly must have involved flirting and discussing sensitive material with Kessinger. But we also see indications of introversion as well. He didn't seem to be extremely outgoing. Now, another characteristic of grandiose narcissism is being socially bold. There's really no evidence that that was at work here. Self-confident, like that's a possibility here. Again, superficial charm, which is also with psychopathy. Someone who's resistant to criticism, that doesn't seem to be what was going on here. He seemed hypersensitive to criticism, which is more lined up with vulnerable narcissism. And with grandiose narcissism, we also see being callous and unemotional. Again, that overlaps with psychopathy. Now, with vulnerable, we also see shame. That may have been at work, but we see anger and aggression, and those clearly were occurring in this instance. We also see someone who's defensive, avoidant, and anxious. And I'm not sure that was really going on in this case at all. And then also somebody who's socially awkward and shy, and that doesn't seem to be clearly going on either. Something we see with both grandiose and vulnerable narcissism is engaging in fantasies, having fantasies of success, power, and the ideal love. It does seem pretty clear that Chris was engaged in a lot of fantasy, in particular around that ideal love, and maybe Kessinger had that fantasy as well. And I'll talk about fantasy a little bit later, but it can be a very dangerous part of narcissism. So we see some elements of narcissism here, but I think the stronger connection is with psychopathy.
At the end of July, Chris pulled himself away from his newfound romance with Nikki to meet with his estranged wife. He took this opportunity to convince Nikki that he attempted to fix things with Shanann during his week with her in North Carolina. There, in a conversation that Shanann felt was totally out of left field, he told her that he didn't want this new baby and that he felt they were now incompatible. Shanann initially suspected and eventually dismissed the idea that Chris was seeing someone else. His refusal of sex and his inability to console her in any way when they had this discussion, though, gave her a large amount of unease all the same. Shanann recounted an instance where she had bad nausea and was vomiting, and Chris just stood there, not offering any words of encouragement or help of any kind. If he was, it was as if he was nothing more than a stranger to her. Shanann's worry began to grow, and she spoke with several of her friends over the week for help and support. In one conversation with Addie, Shanann wrote, "Chris told me last night he's scared to death about this third baby," end quote. With Chris dropping bombs about wanting nothing to do with the baby, Shanann was even more shaken when she relayed other troubling news. Quote,
"He hasn't touched me all week, kissed me, talked to me, except for when I'm trying to figure out what is wrong."
She then quoted him to Addie in their text conversation that, quote,
"Opposites attract, but this isn't working anymore."
The conversation she had with her friend Taylor this same week went similarly, with her crying over the apparent loss of her doting husband. Shanann was adrift. While tending to his wife in the barest of minimums, Chris stayed in communication with his mistress, Nikki. He told her that he had tried to fix things with Shanann and that she refused to make it work. At the end of his stale and distant week with Shanann, though, he agreed to go away with her the weekend after she returned from her upcoming business trip. It seemed as though things might be headed in the right direction for Shanann, and she was ready to do what it took to get their life and their relationship back on track. Chris served his own agenda during this business trip by reaching out more to Nikki, who was even planning to help Chris find a new place to live. After all, he assured Nikki that the separation with Shanann and the sale of their house was all coming to a close soon enough. He was ready to make the next step. Shanann took a trip out to Arizona for a work convention, and her coworker friends attended with her. During this time, her friends described her as distraught, and it was clear that she was perturbed by the state of her relationship with Chris. She shared with her colleagues that she was scared Chris was going to leave her and take the kids from her. One phone call Shanann held with him over speakerphone convinced her friend Cassie that something was off. Chris was cold and clearly did not want to talk to her. Shanann had reached the proverbial end of her rope, and her friends struggled to keep her afloat throughout the weekend, even struggling to keep her blood sugar up as she wasn't eating or sleeping. From the issues they had already encountered to new suspicions brought on by unexplained transactions Chris made while she was away, Shanann felt she had plenty to worry about, and it showed. Meanwhile, Chris was pulling strings back home to see Nikki yet again. He asked his friend, Jeremy Lindstrom's daughter, McKenna, to watch the kids while Shanann was out of town. He told Jeremy that his work had given him tickets to the Rockies game that weekend, and the company would be upset if he didn't go. Although he didn't say who he went with, it became clear when Chris spent over $60 that night that he didn't simply have a night at the game. In fact, he had been out with Nikki yet again, enjoying a dinner at the Lazy Dog Bar. After this weekend of deceit, Chris went back to tending to his kids before Shanann arrived back home. Shanann arrived home at approximately 1:48 in the morning, dropped off by one of her friends, and then she entered the house. This was the last time Shanann Watts was seen alive. Chris had sex with Shanann after her arrival back home, and Chris felt as though he was being tested. He said that this encounter made him question his identity and who he'd become. He later described the intercourse with her as a trigger point, at which he compared himself to a bomb that might blow up. After their sexual encounter, Chris said that he and Shanann went to sleep, and once they awoke, Shanann turned to face Chris. Chris felt at the moment like it was time to talk. He climbed on top of her, and during their discussion, was straddling Shanann atop her belly. While they discussed his fears of Shanann leaving with the kids, Chris spoke atop her belly. While they discussed the fears of Shanann leaving with the kids, Shanann warned him that he may be harming the baby while sitting on top of him. Chris begged for Shanann to cancel their trip that upcoming weekend, and he asked if she could move with him to get away from the house. More than anything, Chris felt worried about the affair, thinking that the most recent $60 date had cost him his home life. Shanann confronted him once more about the suspected affair, and Chris denied it, followed up by saying that he didn't love Shanann anymore. Shanann then spoke her last words, quote,
"You're never going to see the kids again. You're never going to see them again. Get off me. Don't hurt the baby."
Chris, upon hearing this, choked Shanann, strangling her to death. Shanann never cried out or fought, according to Chris. But although it takes 2 to 4 minutes to strangle someone to death, Chris said he couldn't let go. He then relayed that the commotion from killing his wife is what believes woke his eldest daughter, Bella, who entered the room to ask what was wrong. Chris told Bella, "Mommy don't feel good." But a smart girl like Bella understood it was much more than just that. He gathered Bella and her sister, Celeste, and he placed them in the truck with their dead mother. He drove them out to an oil field, where he then proceeded to smother Celeste, the younger child. Bella saw what happened to Cece and her mom and pled with her father, asking him, quote, "Is the same thing going to happen to me as Celeste?" End quote. Chris then told her that it was, and Bella screamed the words, "Daddy, no," as he closed in with the blanket to smother her to death. And that concludes part 1 of episode 8, Chris Watts. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we will see you next week for part 2. And the voice you hear portraying Shanann, that is none other than the Murderific podcast host, Bernadette. Please check out her podcast on all platforms, Murderific Podcast. The show was researched and written by David Young, co-produced by myself and Monkey Basement Studio. You can follow Devil We Know on Twitter at Devil We Know Pod, Instagram at Devil We Know Pod, and on Facebook at Devil We Know Podcast.